coming here today kind of feels like coming back to a group of friends. Some of you may be a little bit aware, but God started a pretty important thing in my life when I was here about a year ago. My husband had just deployed, I think, that week, and my daughter was having a horrific time with his absence. And I came here, and you all sang Good, Good Father, and it almost made it so I could not say anything. Because it was just, you know, God really touched on my heart and reminded me that he's got my kids and that he's got us. But I did leave here that day, almost a year ago, with the first kind of strong inkling that my current work situation was not working for my family. And that was the beginning of me kind of wrestling with this weird sensation that God might call me out of ministry, because usually God calls people into ministry. So that just seemed like it couldn't be true. But after a lot of wrestling, I did come to a place where I could tell my boss that I needed to be more present with my family, with my husband away, because the pastor's life is Sundays and evenings and, well, anytime someone chooses to get sick or die. So it was just really hard on my family. And the next day after I dropped down my letter of resignation, I got a call from the president of a company, Endeavor, that I had done some consulting for, and he was saying to me, hey, could you reconsider taking this job that I offered you a couple years ago? And I was like, well, I'm actually looking for a new job, but I don't think this could be the one, because my whole purpose is to be more present, and it's a much bigger company, and I don't see how I could do that. And he said, what do you need? I said, well, here's what I would need. And he said, no problem. And he has been more protective of my time with my family than I am. And every time I say to him, no, I can make that trip, he said, no, we agreed you'd only do 4 a year, and I don't want you to leave. So I'm not going to let you do more than the 4 that we agreed to. So it's been an incredible experience joining this company. They are passionate about making sure that every child that's in one of their schools is thriving. And they take care of the people who work for them and their teachers really, really well. So on that note, I do want to thank Endeavor for letting me be here today. I asked my boss if I could come, and he says, so you're going to be talking with a group of mothers? I said, yes. He goes, we freaking love mothers around here. He's like, go add value to the mothers. I was like, I'll do what I can. So Ricardo at Endeavor Schools sends you his best and hopes that you are thriving as mothers. And should you need schools in Dallas, Houston, Florida, San Diego, Minneapolis, Atlanta, please grab a card and let me know. We don't have any in Virginia. All right, so let's get started with our task today, which is a huge one. So we're going to talk about discipline. And again, my mentor says I'm nuts to ever talk to parents about stuff like this. Because I'm sure I shared with you last time, he says, you know, researchers, we talk about the big scale, and we can make some assumptions, and we can make some pretty strong statements about what is typically the best approach, but you get in a room full of parents, and it's just all these little unique cases, and what applies generally does not always fit the rule for their child, so you're walking into the firing squad, he would say. But I trust you, ladies. You'll be gentle with me. So there's no miracle seminar on parenting. There's a reason you can't get a PhD in parenting or even a degree in it, because there's just no consistency. Every time it's new. So if you've had more than one child, you know that this is true. So strategies that work today may not work tomorrow. What worked with one child may not work with yours. What is generally the right approach? Well, your kid might be the one who breaks that rule, and you will go nuts if you think that he or she has to fit into that mold. So what I'm going to do today is give you some general strategies, but I am going to tell you some things that I know for sure. All right? And they have nothing to do with your child. They have to do with you. So that's where we're going to start. So we go to the next slide. So what we're going to talk about today is awareness of your discipline toolbox, making sure that you're disciplining in relationships. We're going to talk about composure, remembering who your child is, and prayer. And guess what? None of these things are things I'm asking your child to do. These are all about you. So we're going to really be thinking about ourselves today instead of trying to change our children. Because if you were here last year, the big message was God made our children who he made them to be. And when we try to fit them into some mold that is not the one he made for them, it's damaging to us and to them, and it dishonors his creation. So we're going to try to figure out how we can guide our children's behavior by starting with ourselves. So let's go ahead and move to the next slide. All right, so what tools do we have in our toolbox? You're going to parent most likely the way that you were parented. Now, if you're sitting here today and you're thinking, I was not parented well, and I'm working very hard not to parent the way that I was parented, some of that stuff might seep in. You might try to parent the way a teacher taught you, but you really are going to fall back on what was done to you. Now, if you have had an abusive past and have benefited from a lot of therapy, that's really going to help you, because you're going to use some of those tools that you got in those sessions to kind of hit some of that. If you were abused as a child by your parents and are not getting help in that way, I strongly encourage you to do so. Your children really need that from you. Need you to be willing to go and see a therapist and get some help with that, because you do need to have at least an awareness of where you're coming from, because the tools that we'll use with you, that's where you go when you're tired, that's when you go when you're stressed. So when you were a child, how adults and parents and teachers responded to your negative behavior is most likely how you're going to respond to your children's negative behavior. Tended to be like this: fear of punishment, do it this way or this bad consequence is coming your way. Fear of lost love. Things like, I worked so hard to clean this house. It was clean, and then you came in 5 minutes. Look at it. Now I have to do it again. So fear of lost love. You know what? Shame leaves us stuck in our mistakes. So that approach that I sometimes use is not helpful. And also fear of punishment. That's having children act from a place of fear, right? And that's not where we want them to act from. So these are very passive ways to control our behavior, because they're external, right? So the child is going to do the behavior, the things you want the child to do, because of these things out here rather than the things in here, right? So what happens when these things are gone? What's going to guide the child's behavior? We have an opportunity to help our children learn how to do the right thing from in here. Not because they're afraid of all these things out here. So that's what we're going to work on developing today. So God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and love and discipline. Now, often we think discipline and punishment are the same thing. They are absolutely not the same thing. And it's really important that those of us who choose to follow Jesus, that maybe you are not, but for those of us who have decided to be disciples, that we really understand the difference between these two words. So when we're talking about punishment, we're talking about really getting what you deserve, right? So you've done this thing. Now we talk about natural consequences. Sometimes that happens. So now this thing must happen. It's sort of that justice piece. So you hit your sister, so now I'm going to spank you. One good turn deserves another. Discipline is a different thing. Discipline is about being a disciple, which is teaching another way. So one is about just the consequences, and the other is about teaching and learning, right? So if we want the child to respond just to the stuff out here, that's the punishment. Those are the consequences, and there are some. I'm not saying consequences aren't a part of discipline. They are. But we want them to learn a new way, a better way to behave, right? Yeah? Okay, good. Glad we all want the same thing. But we have to think about the model that Jesus set for us. So we could have been stuck with the punishment option, right? We've all sinned, we've all made mistakes and done things we should not have done, and that leaves us outside of Jesus. And that is the natural consequence of our choice, right? But he chose to make us disciples. So he brings us into the circle and he teaches us another better way. Does that make sense? So we want to be like him, so we want to parent that way. We want to be parents who encourage our children to be disciples through discipline. Okay, let's take a look at the next slide. Positive relationships are going to be at the heart of positive discipline. Often when I work with teachers, I'll get, you know, this child's behavior is terrible, blah, 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 and we have some children with some shocking behavior. But my first question is, have you earned the right to correct this child? Does this child believe that you're for him? Does this child believe that you have his best interests at heart? Because I'm telling you, it's night and day. Even a child who struggles with all kinds of behavior issues, if they believe that the adult trying to help and support them really likes them and really wants good things for them, they're going to respond a lot better to the approaches that are being given to them. So you need to really have a relationship with your child that really earns your right to correct them. And there are days when I have not yet done that with my children. I woke up not in a great place, and I started the tone off wrong, and they are now 7 and are going to respond to my negativity with negativity. So I have to reset and earn the right to correct them that day. Does that make sense? So think about your relationship. So start, and I use this strategy with my parents. They're getting older now and are having a hard time with like aging in some ways. And I have to think, are we in a good place before I tell them that they've got to get someone to help with this job that they're doing and it's going to like send my father to the hospital? Okay, we're in a good place. I can talk to them about this. So are you in a good place? Before you get into a correcting mode with your child, make sure you're in a good place with them. So that moment when you've lost it because they've destroyed the house, that's not a good time to work on teaching them. You need to calm down. So most often the behaviors that disappoint us are rooted in weak or broken relationships. That cause broken relationships and cease as relationships grow stronger or restored. So what can you do if you know that your child needs some discipline, but you also know that you're not in a good place with them relationally? My advice is, because most of you have young children, I assume most of your children are young, play with them. Get on the floor and play with them for a little while. Listen to them and observe them. Often, I'm going to talk a little bit more about this book, Becky Bailey. I don't know if you've heard of her. If you're looking for a discipline book, this is my favorite one. It's called Easy to Love, Difficult to Discipline. And she's going to go through a lot of what we talk about here. She talks a lot about trying to take the positive view of children's behavior. It doesn't mean you let it continue, but at least you try to understand the positive intent behind it. So when a child snatches something from another child, do you think that the intent is to upset their friend? No. Young children very rarely have that kind of process. No, what they want is that thing. They want to enjoy playing with it. Is that a bad thing? No, there's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. The problem is they have not yet learned that they have to go through a process to be able to use that toy, and that snatching it is not an acceptable process. But what you can do to help that relationship be solid is, instead of going right for the "you hurt your friend," first communicate to them, "I saw, I understood, and I know you're a good person," by saying something like, "You really wanted to play with that because it's so fun, but I cannot let you take it away from your friend like that. Let's think of another way." So right away, you're helping to communicate to the child that you know they're good, you're for them, you're all about them. They don't need to be afraid of what you're going to say next, which is, "I cannot let you snatch things." Whereas if you go right for the, "You took that away from him and you should not have done that. That is mean. You made him cry." Now what kind of posturing is that child going to have? "I want this person to stop talking to me as soon as possible. So I'm going, depending on my age, I'm going to run away. I'm going to say whatever they want to hear so I can get away from them, but I'm certainly not open to learning a better way right now. I just want this encounter to be done." Right? Okay. First, get in a good place with them. One thing you can do to make sure that you're doing this, really doing this, rather than just going through the motions so that you can then yell at them, is write down and document their ideas and questions. Are we relationally good with our children before we discipline them? Sometimes we are in a cycle of conflict because we aren't in a good place relationally. So relational parenting, though, is not permissive parenting. Don't misunderstand me. You can have a positive relationship with your child that actually has very tight boundaries. It all has to do with how you're communicating with them, but also how you honestly perceive them. My brother and I have had this conversation many times. He kind of starts with the stance of, you know, all of us are bad. And I'm an optimist. I start with the stance, well, God made us all good. We choose bad things, but God made us all good. So couldn't we start there? Do we have to start with we're all bad? He's like, children are naturally sinful. I'm like, well, okay, I accept that, but that's not a burden I would want someone to like, hello, Amy, I know you're sinful. I know it. We haven't had a conversation yet, but I know it's true. I will tell you, I am Amy and I am sinful. But I'm glad that, I hope that's not how you see me the first time you lay eyes on me. I would much rather you see me as I hope I can see you, which is made in the image of God, which is a wonderful thing. I make some awful mistakes and I need forgiveness, but I'm made in the image of God, which is awesome. So that's where we have to start with our children, is they're made in the image of God, and we want to communicate to them that we see that wonderful, powerful creation. Then we can help correct them. Okay, so when things get hairy, this all sounds nice, Amy, but you've not been to my house. All right, things do get hairy, they will get hairy, and you'll have to use all kinds of strategies for the rest of your life, not just with your children, but with your husband and your in-laws, and who knows. So what you need to do is address your own composure. So again, we're not talking about how to fix the kids. We're talking about how to put you in a good posturing. So we acknowledge that we want to discipline, not punish. We want to be in a good relational stance with our children so that they can respond to the teaching of a better way. But sometimes we are so tired and we have so much going on and we are only human and our blood pressure gets right above our noses and we're going to scream. So what do we do? Becky Bailey says you need to be a star, which means you stop, you take a breath, or actually she says smile. We usually say stop or smile. I think smile's better. So smile, take a deep breath, and relax. And then tell yourself, I can handle this. So smile, even when you don't want to. Take a deep breath, relax. I can handle this. I've added in everyone is safe. Largely because sometimes everyone is not safe. And you don't really have time to relax. You need to act right away. So, and I'm looking around. All right, everyone is safe. I can handle this. If everyone is not safe, we go to the back of our brain. Did I talk to you about this last time? So back here is where we are emotional. We're not thinking when we're in the back of our brain. We are acting. It's fight or flight. And when somebody is bleeding profusely, it is time to hang out back here and respond fast. And people talk all the time about when they're in crisis and they do all this stuff and they don't remember doing it. It's usually the right thing because they've learned how to do it when they were in the frontal lobe. But we don't want to be back here if we're trying to teach our children a better way, because this is where the anger is, this is where the screaming is, this is where the running is, this is where the throwing things around the room is. It's not where you want to be when you're trying to teach. It's where you want to be when you need to call 911. Or get out of the house, right? Or fight off an intruder. No, you want to be up here, which is your frontal lobe. This is where you can think and problem solve. So until that blood pressure goes down, and you got to get back up here. The fastest way to go from here to here is to breathe. It releases all kinds of great chemicals, and it helps your brain say, all right, we're safe. We can come back up here. That's the other reason I say everyone is safe, and I can handle this. Those messages will help you get back to the front of your brain. Now you can think clearly again, and you're no longer scary mommy. So take a deep breath, relax, you can handle this. Be a star. And then we go to the next slide. I touched on this a little bit, but remember who your child is. So now you're calm again, and this is not in Becky Bailey's book, but we as Christians have to remember this. Who is your child? Your child is made in the image of God. So as we discipline and disciple our children, we must be mindful of how God has put them together. Sometimes the very thing you want to teach out of them is the very thing that God designed them to do. Some examples. They are designed to delight and care for the world he created. So it's very important to them that that worm gets off the sidewalk before it becomes crispy. It's their duty on this earth, and you in a hurry to get to the supermarket may not understand how important it is to them. So you've got to be mindful of who God made them to be. And I just keep saying this every time I talk to moms, build in tons of time. Anytime you have to do something, build in tons of time so they can rescue the worms, because that is who God made them to be. He also designed them to create. God, the great creator, shocking. We're made in his image. That means that we like to create. There's something in us, and it's so good for them. If you want to talk about great brain stuff that's going to set them up to be successful in their life across all kinds of areas, creating is part of it. But guess what? Creation is insanely messy, especially when they're toddlers. And then when they get really creative and know where all your stuff is when they're 4, 5, and 6, forget it. They are going to make a tremendous mess in your house. Now, so know yourself. If you're an organized person who can really follow a routine, you might consider getting a book called Montessori at Home. And it will teach you a bit about organizing your home so that it's a place where your children can access the materials they want to use and teach them how to put them away. But friends, you got to know yourself. You have to be disciplined to do this. You have to be disciplined, right? So I actually am terrible at this. I'm awful. So I know it. I teach it. I know it. But I also know that I'm not going to want to sit there and work with them to put those materials away in every single place perfectly. I do it at school, no problem. But at home, it just all falls apart. So you got to know yourself. So my children and I came to an agreement that there was a space for creating in our house, and I'm not going to mess with their projects, and they're going to make sure that all the caps are on and all the glue is shut, and reasonably things are going to be put away, and I won't throw away their creations. So, but this was a 2-year exploration in what's going to work for everyone. So you got to know. But Montessori at home, if you're a very disciplined person and your child is one who responds well to very clear instructions, and a lot of children do. My son absolutely does. My daughter does not. So it would be a great solution for you. And it has to do with making sure everything is at their level, everything is marked so they know where it goes, and you know exactly when you're done with the work cycle and where everything needs to go, but you have to train them and teach them how to do it. So you have to be willing to put in a pretty big investment to this, but it works really well. Works really well. But if that's not you, don't fight against who you are. You got to find a different system. So they're going to make a mess. And if you are the kind of person who loses it about the messes, then you're going to need to work to find a way to get a solution that works for them because they're created to create. And that's going to result in a mess. They're also designed to move. They really, really need to move. And it's not just the babies and the toddlers. They need to move all the way up into middle school at a pretty fast rate. They start to get more control over that in high school, but these kids have got to move. So when they are wiggling next to you, it could be that they are doing the very thing they need to do to try to pay attention. So try not to come against the person they are created to be, which is to move. Moving is really important to them because it does help them make brain connections. So when they're holding still, sometimes they're paying so much attention to holding still because it's not a natural state for them that they don't hear anything else. So by asking them to hold still, you're actually counteracting the thing you want them to get, which is what I say to teachers all the time who are wasting all their energy getting these kids to hold still. I'm like, children who are still and quiet are not learning. So why, if that's your job, are you wasting all your energy on getting these children to be still and quiet? They're not learning, right? We want them to learn. So let's get them moving and let's get them talking and let's help them. So one thing you can do, so if you bring your child to church, fabric can be good, different kinds of fabric. You get a little bag of fabric and they can rub it. I've done this with children in a lot of schools who can't hold still and need to move, giving them a fabric piece. I also sometimes ask the question, what's the problem with them standing up? Or them jiggle, like, why is that? And there are cases where it's not great, right? Like kicking the airplane. Like you just feel terrible for that person in front of you. So there are strategies that you can use to try and help their body be as still as possible. And things like fidgets. Fidget spinners are not fidgets, though. We can talk about that later if you want to. Just raise your hand. They don't count. But things to keep their hands busy. The problem with airplanes is they're not designed for children, so that seat is incredibly uncomfortable for them. Like, you know how it is when you're in a seat that isn't right for you? Like, imagine if you had to sit in a seat all day where your feet did not hit the floor. You know, your back would start to hurt. Everything would start to hurt. It's really uncomfortable for them. So bear that in mind, and I bless you on the airplane. It's a hard one. So one thing we want to ask is, are we maybe fighting against the very things they were designed to do at this age? How can we better ensure that they do what they were created to do and still get through what we need to do? So please, again, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying because they need to move and they need to talk and they need to stop that we don't do anything that we need to get done as moms. We just need to be strategic about it. And I think it's okay to at times say, right now, the most important thing is for us to get from point A to point B. So on this trip, we are not going to stop to smell things, and we're going to go fast, and let's see if you can help mommy. A great way to do it is to tell your toddler or your preschooler, I need your help. So this morning, coming here, we're very slow in the morning at my house. I told him last night, I said, hey, Peter and Izzy, I'm gonna need your help tomorrow because I'm gonna go talk to these moms, and I want to honor their time, and I want to get there in time to see them. So I need you to help make sure we get along. How can we be on time? They're old enough to plan. 5, 6-year-olds, 4-year-olds, even 3-year-olds to some extent, not so much, can help you plan. So they came up with ideas like, we'll lay our clothes out, we'll put our bowls and cereals out, you can take your shower and we'll feed ourselves. And then, so that was kind of a game. I was like, all right, I'm getting in the shower. Let's see if you can be all ready when I come out. And they are like, they jumped out and said, ta-da, and they were ready. So I made a big fuss over them. So make it a game, make it an accomplishment. Some kids really like their, my kids for a, now nothing works forever. My kids did really well for a while with a checklist. They wrote, we wrote it ourselves, like, what do you need to do? So for our visit to the grocery store, what are the things we're going to do? We're going to get buckled in our car seat quickly. We're going to stay next to mommy in the parking lot. We're not going to, we're going to hold on to the cart, right? And so they have their little, I got a little clipboard, so they carry their clipboards, and they have their little marker, and when they do it, I said, did you get buckled quickly? Yes. Check it off. Did you hold on to the cart? Are you holding on to the cart? Oh, no. You are holding on to the cart. So you can use these things to empower them, to help them move along to where you need to go. Sometimes you don't have a day where you can stop and smell the flowers, but most days you should. That's all I'm saying. Most days you should. But help them know the days that you can't, and help them understand the difference in tone. Does that make sense? All right. So remember that as we discipline, our objective is to help them live into God's plan for them. And part of that is honoring you as their parents, just like we honor God as our Father. But don't abuse that, right? Don't frustrate your children. So know the moments where that's the thing you're going to demand of them. And you can demand that of them. I need you to do what mommy is saying right away. We were at a shopping mall, and a woman passed out. And, you know, all educators were CPR trained and all that stuff. So I said, stand against the wall, hold on to that brick, do not let go. And they paused for a minute, and I gave them that look. And I said, this is serious, obey mommy now. And they did. And they stayed there, and we did the CPR stuff, and the lady was fine. But they need to know the difference. So if you're always throwing around that tone of voice, they're not going to know when it's serious. I mean, in that case, it could have been life or death. And I certainly wasn't going to want to be worried while I'm trying to help this woman that my kids are running down the mall, right? Because that's another life or death situation. So you need to use that voice at the right time. They're starting to run into the street. Good time to use that voice, right? They're about to beat on great grandma. That's a good time to use the voice. Honor great grandma. Do not. I'm going to tell you a funny story. I don't know if I have time. My kids, my husband's away, like I said, and so I was visiting my grandmother, their great-grandmother. She's 92. And she's like, Amy, why don't you go for a run? I know that would bless you. I'll watch your children. I was like, yeah. She's like, Amy, I raised 15 children. I can handle 2 6-year-olds. I'm like, okay, maybe she can. So I got them. Of course, I said, do not disobey great-grandma. Do not fight. Be angelic. I will be back in 30 minutes. I come back, they're playing Twister with her. She's on the mat. And I was like, and my son says, we were very good. We did not fight. We did everything great grandma said. I was like, grandma, what are you doing? And she said, it was my turn. I was like, grandma, I have 52 cousins. I am not going to be the one who kills you. She says, but wouldn't this be a good way to go? I'm like, oh, man. Yeah, be nice to great-grandma. Okay, so when things get hairy, so what I'm going to do is try to give you some steps you can take. These work a lot of the time. There are things that make them less effective. Again, like your level of sleep, how calm you can remain, how much sleep they've gotten. I mean, if your kids are tired, it's not a good time to teach them. My son on Wednesday, that kid, I don't know what kind of night he had the night before, but he was like on the floor at church, just like fussing because of something his sister did. And I was trying to like go through these steps, and then it dawned on me, this child is so tired. This is a fruitless exercise. So instead, I just looked at him. I said, would you like to go home and have a cuddle? We went home. We had a cuddle. He was fine the next day. It wasn't like him, his behavior anyway. So I was like, we will teach. Know when it's a good time to teach. If they're exhausted, you're not helping anyone. It might be time to, but you might want to make a note. This is where you can pull out kind of like teachers. I'll tell them, you know, take a note on the child and see if this is something that's a common occurrence. And if so, then you want to address it when they're in a good place, when they're not hungry, when they're not tired, maybe when you've just played together. And then you can walk them through what the issue is. So, okay, start by stating the problem and naming the emotions. You can go ahead and click. You want to play with that truck, but Lucy is not ready to give it to you. You look angry. So what you're doing is you're reading the situation. So you're not judging. You're saying, this is what I see. You wanted to play with it. She's not ready to give it to you. Your face looks angry. And that gives the child a chance to tell you, no, I'm not angry. I have to poo. Or whatever. Or I had the truck first. Who knows? Okay, then you want to teach them the calming strategy. So if the child is angry, where are they in their brain? They're in the back. Can they learn from you? No. They have to be up here to learn from you. So if you're arguing with a three-year-old, there is not an adult in the room, and nobody is learning anything. Because you're angry, they're angry, nobody's here, nothing good is going to come from that. So don't try to teach the child a better way until the child is calm. Don't address the child until you're calm. And it is okay to say, and I've done this many times, I am so angry right now, I love you too much to talk to you. I'm going to go for a little stroll around the living room. Don't come in there. Or my favorite was I had one of those moments. They were like three. My kid, three is tough. They were two three-year-olds is really tough. So I had gone into the bathroom and shut the door to calm down. I don't remember what they did, but my husband came home around that time, and I hear my son's like knocking, mommy, mommy, and his like hands are coming under the bottom. And I hear my husband behind him say, what's going on, Peter? He says, mommy's in the bathroom. And he says, oh, maybe we should give her some time. And he took them away, and I came out, and I was better. But don't even go there till you're calm. You have to be calm. And don't even go there with them until they're calm. So how do you help them be calm? You want to get them back to the frontal lobe. So help them take a deep breath. When you first start this, it won't be hard. My kids know this. And so I'll say something like, Izzy, we can talk about this, but first let's see if we can help you calm down. And she'll say, I can't breathe. It's her way of saying, I don't want you to calm me down. All these nice chemicals are enraging me in a satisfactory way. So there are all kinds of ways that you can try to help them. So for particular, this doesn't work with my kids anymore. They're too old. But for the younger ones, I had a little girl at a school one time who like would not breathe. And often if I get them to look at me and I just go, they'll do it. But this little girl knew this. So I came, she's like, this teacher said, Dr. Amy's here. And she went, not breathing. So I went over, I said, Kayla, I see you're doing this. And of course, she had to peek to see what I was doing, at which point I went, and she went. So the little ones will just kind of do it if you do it. Another thing you can say to them, and we do this a lot, is, do you want to blow some blow bubbles with me? Let's blow a big bubble. Let's blow little bubbles. And you'll know the moment when their demeanor changes. I did have a little guy with some behavior issues who, the calming was so hard for him. Like, I really believe he couldn't breathe. He was like so, like, I'm talking like he would be in the classroom and he would destroy the place. Everything would be on the floor. Furniture would be overturned. So they'd call me in and I'd get him in his big hug, which is a restraint, and pull him onto my lap. And I'd just whisper in his ear, I'm so glad you're here. You are so precious. You are so wonderful. You are dear. And eventually he would calm down, and I always knew when he'd calm down because he'd pee. I just feel it spreading all over my lap. And I think, now we can do some work. I always brought extra pants. It wasn't a big deal. But I got better, because when they'd call me into that room, I'd just grab my pants. Off we'd go. So help the child take a deep breath, go ahead and click, and tell her you can handle this. That message helps us, it helps them. This one actually still works with my 7-year-olds. So when they get all like this and start, so my son will be like, you tell me to calm down. I can't, I don't know how. How can I calm down? I'll say, Peter, you can handle this. And that positive message goes a long way. So all of the look at me, and that doesn't work with them anymore, and they'll resist the breathing sometimes. But that, I think that affirmation is really still very powerful for them. You can handle this. And also, you're safe. You're safe. And you can handle this. So it works for us. It works for them. My kids, Becky Bailey tells a similar story, but I lived out in my own home. My kids destroyed the basement several times with flour. Did I tell you this the last time? So they had a bunch of, they got some flour when they were 2 and dumped it all over the living room. So I sent them to the basement and I cleaned it up, but somehow on the way they grabbed a measuring cup or 2 and it was all over the basement by the time I got down there. So I put them in the backyard and I cleaned the basement. And we were all good, except for I did not check their little play kitchen. They'd filled all their pots and pans with it. And so the next time they went down to play, which was when my husband got home, it was everywhere. And I walked down there, and I was like, no. So I came back upstairs, and my husband came home. I'm like, go to the basement. He walks downstairs, and he goes, and my son says, breathe, Daddy, you can handle this. And I just laughed. I was like, yeah, you can handle this. I've handled it twice already. I'm not doing it again. So they do learn the script. And I hope one day down the road when, you know, Izzy's friends are trying to get her to do something that is not good for her, she's going to breathe and say, I can handle this. Or some boy breaks up with her and she's crushed. I'm safe. I can handle this. So it's a good message for them to have in their head. Okay, so other things when things get hairy. Go ahead. Oh, go back. So you want to work to restore the relationships. You will invariably get this wrong many, many times, and you're going to have to work to restore the relationships. So you want to work to restore the relationships between the children. I encourage you not to force your children to say, I'm sorry, because what you're doing is creating a disingenuous spouse for whoever they marry. Don't you hate it? I'm sorry. Right? Have you ever heard that from someone? My husband doesn't do that. He doesn't. But my brother-in-law does to my sister, and it makes me nuts. Like, well, I'm sorry. Well, of course you're not sorry when you say it like that. I don't believe it for a second. So we don't want to teach our children to be that kind of apologizer. When they are not sorry, don't make them say they're sorry. Because the goal after conflict is not sorry, is it? What's the goal when there's conflict? To reconnect. So the right question actually needs to be, what do we need to do to make it right? So I will send, as a parent, my kids, when they were littler, we had a step, and they'd take turns saying what they needed for it to be right. So it's actually easier when they were littler. Like, so let's say Izzy punched Peter. So it would be, Izzy, you hurt Peter. I cannot let you punch Peter. That's not okay. Look at his face. How is he feeling? He's sad. He is sad. Do you want to play with Peter? Yes. Do you want Peter to be sad? No. So what will you do to make it right? I will get him an ice pack. I will give him a sticker. I will give him his truck. So you want to help them to start think about, when I get it wrong with someone, my job now is to make it right. Daniel Tiger, anybody watch him? I'm a huge Daniel Tiger fan. So if your kids are going to be watching something, and they're between the ages of, like, so no screens between birth and 3, ideally, but between 3 and 5, that's a great, it's a great show. I love it. It's probably my favorite one out there for that age group. And Daniel Tiger says, saying sorry is the first step, then you have to make it right. So we want to make it right. So help them with that. Sometimes they don't know, so give them time to try and figure it out, and then you might say, because we jump in. As adults, we jump in way too fast. We tell them the answers. We tell them what they want to hear. And do you know what we're teaching our children when we do that? You can't think for yourself. You got to wait for someone else to teach you the answer. And do you really want your children walking through life waiting for someone else to give them the answer? No, remember, we want it to be from in here. So give them time. But if you really don't think they know what to do, you can ask, would you like some ideas? Now, in a classroom setting, these ideas would always come from other children. I encourage teachers never to give the ideas. But if it's just you and a child, you're it. So offer some ideas, but think outside the box. Think about what your children actually, you know, he really likes to play in soapy water in the sink. Maybe you could help me fill up the sink. We'll put some soap in it and he can play in there. That might make him feel better. Is that a good idea? Yeah, that's a good idea. So you want them to go through that thought process of how do I make it right? How do I make it better? Okay, or sometimes you can ask the child who's been hurt, what can your friend do to make it right with you? Now my children, being older, have gotten into this like obnoxious response to this, so I'm working through how to handle it. My daughter would be like, I want you to apologize 10 times. And my son is like, for real? So now we're having to talk about like manipulation, and it's all about the power, and but that's 7 and 8 year olds for you. Another thing you might want to consider when, if you have, how many of you have siblings that fight? Oh, okay. An important question when they're arguing to ask them is, do you want to play together? Because sometimes the answer is no. And then the solution is easy. All right, you don't want to play together. I can tell you're having a hard time playing together. Where are you going to play? Where are you going to play? Sometimes the answer is hard because it's no and yes. All right, and so then you get to kind of help them work through this process of, you know, your little brother really wants to spend some time with you. How much time would be acceptable to you? So you can bless him. And then I will make sure that you have time to play by yourself. Also think about things like play dates. I think our temptation as parents is when there's a play date is the littlest one feels excluded and we want the big ones to include them. That's kind of not the purpose of the play date, right? If you've got 2 4-year-olds getting together to play, it's because they really want to play as 4-year-olds. They don't want to play as 2-year-olds. They got to do that all day. So that's when you want to actually work with the 2-year-old to understand that, you know, your sister and her friend are playing together. They would like some privacy. What can you and mommy do together? All right, and I tried to think when my niece, who spends a lot of time with us, when she would come over and want to hang out with friends, she's older than my children, it would be like, okay, she's going to be doing this. They're going to want to annoy her. And so what activity am I going to arrange for the two of them and me to do together that's a little different and special so that they'll leave her be? Does that make sense? Okay. Now, if they both say yes, they do want to play together, then you want to go through the process of, okay, let's talk about how are you going to play together. Sometimes they need to set the rules. They need your help. And then I'd write it down. And so if more conflict emerges, you can say, well, let's go take a look at our plan of how this game was going to go. Oh, okay, remember you said you were going to do it this way. And I'm surprised at how well this works. Because I expect them to, like, hold steady. And, you know, there are always outliers. But on the whole, they'll be like, oh, yeah, that was our plan. Okay, let's do it. Every now and then, they'll be like, yeah, I don't like that plan anymore. Let's change it. Well, then you go back to the drawing board. And you might have to ask the question again. Are you willing to play this game this way? Or would you rather not play together at all? Like, compromise is necessary. Put the effort in now. Because if you can teach your children how to do this, you won't need to be in the equation. So now what I do when my kids get like this, hey, I hear a lot of conflict in here. Do you two want to play together? Yes, but he wants to do it this way, and I want to do it this way. I get out the clipboard and the pencils, and I say, why don't you both write down your plans? Now that they can write. Okay, we have our plans. All right, why don't you sit down here on the couch and figure out what's going to happen? And then if they might call me in and say, we need help. And I come back to, do you want to play together? We do. Okay, well, then somebody's going to have to change because you can't. Or come up with a way to do both. Often they come up with a way to do both. But it's all them. I strongly encourage you not to be the umpire who makes the call for them, because then you will always have to get in there and it will drive you nuts. I'm trying to give you time to read. Okay? So, or take a bath. Or eat some cake. I don't know. Whatever you want to do. So you got to put it in up front. You know, I say this about sleep training, too. Like, when my kids went from cribs to toddler beds, good Lord. Can you imagine? They're, like, pushing those things everywhere. We took all the furniture out of the room and just put the mats on the floor. And even still, they just kept getting... The problem was they were in this tiny little room and they'd reach out and hold hands and pull each other out of the crib onto each other's heads. And I didn't want, like, concussions. So we moved them to toddler beds before I actually would have recommended. They weren't ready, but otherwise they were going to hurt themselves. So we did it, and it was 13 hours of putting them back to bed the first night. 13 hours, because they took turns. You see, they'd fall asleep for a little while the other one was up making... doing who knows what, coming out. And I only told them three times to stay in their beds, and then I just pick them up and put them in. And we did it on shifts. The second night, it was significantly less. By the third night, it was an hour. By the fourth night, it wasn't happening again, and we haven't had to deal with it since. You got to put it in. But you have to be willing to do 13 hours of putting children back in bed. My husband bought me a very nice bottle of wine for that night. We had a date on the stairs. But you got to brace yourself. You got to be ready to do the hard work. And this is an example of if you can put this hard work into teaching them how to play together and how to read their own emotions and know, I actually don't want to play with anyone right now, and that is why I am so difficult, then you will be doing them a service for the rest of their lives. Do any of you ever feel like you don't want to play with anyone? And get very difficult? You get contrary? Children, they're people just like us. Okay. So another thing I encourage you to do when things get hairy is to pray. We are very fortunate in that even though I cannot stand up here and give you the answers for every situation you're going to encounter, there is someone who knows your children intimately and knows you intimately and knows exactly what's happening between the two of you and the other people in your household and knows exactly what needs to happen so that you can all be right with God and right with each other. So I encourage you in those moments when you're smiling, taking a deep breath, relaxing, and saying, everyone is safe, I can handle this, to also say, dear God, give me wisdom. Please prepare my children's hearts. Please prepare my heart. Do it every time. And if you're a wise mother, you'll do it out loud so that your children start to learn that this is how we respond to moments that are difficult. We ask God to help us. And then, so a common prayer I'll say is, you know, dear Jesus, I'm really tired, but I want to help my children learn the best way to have a good relationship together. Please help me to know how to help them. Dear Jesus, please help us to find a way to be friends together. Dear Jesus, please help us to find a way for everyone to honor each other. It's very easy to pray, dear Jesus, help us all to have fun, but that actually isn't the ultimate goal. It's that we honor and respect each other and that we honor God. Dear Jesus, please help us to remember that you made each one of us good. And you want good things for us. Whatever your heart needs to pray, pray it and pray it out loud. And don't do what I often do, which is to forget to thank God once he's answered it in a positive way. You know, the Bible says God wants good things for us. So when we're asking for a good thing, like having right relationships, and we're willing to put in the work to have the right relationships, I believe that he will honor that. It might take a while, and we might have to put in work and teach our children that relationships are hard work. But God will honor that. So the question you have to ask yourself is, am I willing to ask him for that help? And then thank him for it so that our children can, and we can acknowledge that that's where it came from. So making sure you praise God out loud for restoring our relationships. Thank you, Jesus, for helping Lucy and Matt to be friends. Thank you for this truck that we get to share, whatever it might be. Okay, now we're going to shift into kind of a new phase of this talk, which is based on a survey I did with moms and their questions they asked me. So one of the things I got was, please, oh please, help me with my toddler. So let's start with babies. You don't discipline a baby. You meet their needs. They need to learn that the world is safe. They need to learn that the world has what they need. So the notion of, I'm going to put my baby on the floor and tell them not to touch this thing so they can learn how to obey me, don't do that. There'll be plenty of opportunities down the road where they will have to do the thing you're asking of them. You don't want to teach them that you ask strange things of them. You want to teach them that you ask good things of them. So don't worry about disciplining your babies. Meet their needs. You may need to sleep train them depending upon your cultural background. That's a whole other conversation. We can get into it if we have time, if you want. Both ways are right, by the way. Co-sleeping, there's nothing wrong with it. Teaching your baby to sleep by themselves, there's nothing wrong with that either. There are good ways and bad ways to do both. But there's nothing inherently wrong with either approach. So don't be judgy to each other. My question is, what do you need? Okay, so the babies, don't worry about it. Just love them, but make sure you're getting what you need as you love them, because you're not really genuinely able to care for them if you're not getting what you need, like sleep and food and fresh air. Okay, toddlers. Make it easy on them and on you by placing things you don't want them to handle where they can't see them or at least can't touch them. It doesn't matter how many times you tell them don't, their brain can't hold that, and so you just are going to frustrate them. Your relationship is going to be strained. So I say if you have a lot of beautiful things that you want to have to show your grandchildren, you might want to pack them up and put them in the attic till your toddlers are older. I'm not even kidding. Like, you just need to accept that if it's where they can reach it, chances of it getting broken are high. We have some decorative pillows that are not what they once were. And I'm just not going to get new ones until my children are of an age where I'm confident they're no longer going to draw on them or spill stuff on them. So, I mean, if you have white furniture, God love you. You might want to sell it. Get something brown. So just make it easy on yourself and know that they are created to move and make messes, and they can't remember that you told them not to touch it. So you're just going to make yourself nuts. So if there is something you want to train them on not touching, you know, work on things like the fireplace and the stove, right? Don't work on things like this pretty globe that is just so darn fascinating. There is no way they are not going to touch it. Get rid of it. Put it somewhere else. Please don't trust them with the cat or a baby sister. They are not to be trusted. They will love that cat and baby to death. So wait until they're older. So if you have pets, just know a toddler might love your pet, but a toddler is not a good carer of a pet. Who knows what will happen? They also can't consider consequences. Their brain cannot do it. So don't say things to them like, well, what happened the last 6 times you did that? You pinched your fingers, didn't you? Because they haven't quite gotten in that place in their brain. So you want to remove the chance of them pinching their fingers. So for the toddler, it's removing the dangerous stuff, removing the stuff that you're attached to and don't want them to destroy, removing babies and pets that will get squeezed to death. Get it out of there. Their defiance is often impulsive. They're not out to get you. They're understanding that they can initiate action. They're understanding that they have power and they want to exercise it. And so it's just impulsiveness, and it's not directed at you. So often I get parents who will say, you know, my toddler and I are going to have a horrible relationship. You know, whatever I say, they say no. And they're always, you know, averse to any idea. I'm like, they're just exercising the fact that they're realizing that they're separate. Now, this might sound crazy to you, but actually infants don't always know that they're separate. They don't understand that mommy and me are not connected. And you were, right? So these toddlers are in a developmental phase where they're like, hey, I can do my own stuff. Did you know I can do my own stuff? Don't tell me what to do because I can do my own stuff. And I want to do my own stuff. But that's how God created them. They're at this age where they're realizing that. So the more power you can give them, safe power, the better. So remove all the stuff that they're going to want that they should not have, and instead give them choices that are good. Would you like to put your coat on? Would you like mommy to help you put your coat on? Would you like the purple shoes or the pink shoes? So give them choices, make sure all the choices are acceptable, and move them along through their day. My niece, when she was 2 going on 3, she's since been diagnosed with pretty severe autism, and she was sleeping over at my house, and she said, I am not taking a bath. I said, okay, that's fine, April, you don't need to take a bath. But if you were going to take a bath, would you want to turn the water on? Would you want me to turn the water on? I would want to turn the water on. All right, well, do you want to go ahead and turn the water on? Yes. She turned the water on. It got full. I turned it off. And she looked at me. She said, I am not taking a bath. Okay, I heard you. Yeah, I know you're not taking a bath. But if you were to take a bath, would you want bubbles in there or no bubbles? I would want bubbles. Okay. Should we put some bubbles in? Yes. I am not taking a bath. I know you're not taking a bath. But if you were to take a bath, would you want to play with these floaty toys or these crayons that you can draw on the tub with? The crayons. Okay, should we put the crayons in the tub? Yes. Now, I know you're not taking a bath, but if you were, would you want to take your clothes off or would you want me to? I would want you to. All right, well, can I take your clothes off? Yes, took her clothes off. Now, would you want to get in the tub yourself or me? I would go myself. I said, but can you? Are you big enough? Yes, show me. In she went. She played with the crayons, took her out, putting her in bed. She sits bolt upright. I was not going to take a bath. So you just got to give them bit by bit, inch by inch, see where they go. And, you know, to be honest, if she really didn't, I wouldn't care if she take a bath. She smelled a little, so I'm glad she did. But all right, the other thing I get a lot about is siblings. So you need to consider their ages and development. Again, you want your toddlers to have an opportunity to love on your babies, but they are not to be trusted with them. So that needs to be carefully monitored, and you need to think about how you form those connections carefully. The tough one is when you get like a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old or a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, and that 2-year-old is destroying everything that preschooler is creating. So you've got two kids doing exactly what they're created to do at their age, and it makes everyone crazy. So think about how you can help monitor that. So one thing is that whole, do you want to play together? No. Well, then you want to create a space for your preschooler where that toddler is not going to be. Because remember, if the toddler can see it, then the toddler's not going to really be able to have control over what they do. So you want to teach your older child, he doesn't want to upset you necessarily, but his brain right now is designed to empty and fill, to knock down and build up. Like, that's just what he's going to do. So let's find a safe place for you to work, because I want you to be able to work well. So think about physical barriers for your older child to give them space. And then think about activities they can do together. The pool is a great one. They can both splash around in the pool. They can dig in a sandbox probably okay together, although the little one will probably destroy whatever the other one creates. So think about places where they can play together, but you really want to be educating your older child about how the little one is wired. And don't get too caught up in trying to insist that that younger one not be two, because 2-year-olds do what 2-year-olds do, 1-year-olds do what 1-year-olds do. You're always kind of teaching them how their actions upset others. So if your 2-year-old destroys a sandcastle that your 4-year-old made, look at her face. That she's sad. How are you going to make it right with her? So it's not that they get off the hook and can do whatever they want, but you also want to understand that if it's constant, then you're not putting up the right barriers. There will be moments where you can work on that, but it shouldn't be something that's constantly happening. You want to teach your older child where to go to do work that the younger child won't be involved in, and also try to think of activities they can do together so that they can build a relationship. And remind your older child this won't last forever. Remind yourself it won't last forever, but also be aware of when they're starting to develop, because between 2 and 3.5, a switch goes off and they're going to be able to be better at controlling their behavior, and you need to call them to task on it, right? A good phrase I like to use is, I understand why you did it, but I cannot let you do it, whatever it is. I cannot let you hit. I cannot let you speak to me that way. I cannot let you destroy your sister's work. I understand why you did it, but I cannot let you do it. So you need to have that boundary, that line where you're communicating, yes, I'm taking a positive read of why you did what you did, but I also cannot let you do it. Because our house is a house that is safe, and we're going to treat each other well around here. So let's see if we can find a way to get your needs met without stomping on someone else's. So egocentricity of all involved, you too. What is your objective right now with your children? Is it that you really want to get back to whatever you were doing 5 minutes ago, and so you want it to go as quickly as possible? Or is your objective really to help them learn how to be friends and to have a good relationship? If so, you got to be prepared. It's going to take a while. I have at times said, I want you to have a good relationship. Right now, we don't have time to work through this, so I need you to come with me now. And off we'd go. So follow some of the steps covered earlier in terms of reading positive intent, and then be willing to invest the time. How are we doing on time? 3-4 minutes? Okay. So let's go ahead to the next one. So I'm a disciplined train wreck. Just how much am I messing my kid up? Is there any value in mommy guilt? No. There is nothing good that comes from that at all. It leads to bad stuff. It leads you to be permissive, to let your children do things they shouldn't do because you lose it, right? And then you feel bad, so now you're going to let them do stuff they shouldn't do. That's not helpful. It leads to stress. We all know stress is not good for us. It leads to blame. You're blaming yourself, potentially others. And it leads to weight gain because you feel bad and now you're going to have a cookie. It is also disempowering, and it does not emulate our faith, right? So when you make a mistake, there's something you can do about it. When you lose your cool and yell at your children, don't say, ugh, well, I'm a mess. Instead, say, I made a mistake, and I'm going to make it right. You model for them what that looks like. You go to them and you say, I lost my patience, and I am sorry. Will you forgive me? That wasn't the right way for me to handle it. Okay? Model grace and humility for them, and trust God to make up the difference. Because we're all going to get it wrong, and God will make the difference between the parent you are and the parent your kids need. There's a difference between guilt and conviction, right? Okay. Don't do the mommy guilt. All right, the last thing, so go past this one for now. Okay, I also get a lot of, all I need from you, Amy, is encouragement because I'm tired. So here is my encouragement for the weary mama. Keeping little people alive is very hard. Babies and toddlers are phases that require tremendous stamina and constant attention. Constant. But I encourage you to be free to embrace that fuzzy sleepiness and the joy that can reside in it. It's just a phase. You don't want to miss it. I think it's very easy to kind of take a victimized approach to being a mom, of you people have no idea how hard this is. Everyone in this room knows how hard it is. It's legitimately very, very hard, but it's also a tremendous honor. And I just want to charge you to acknowledge when you need to be energized and you need to get a babysitter or you need someone to help, it's okay to have those moments. But don't let that state of victimization be your state of being. I get it. I had twin babies, twin toddlers. It's very easy to say, I am so tired. I cannot do this for one more day. You have no idea what it's like. I get it. But I also know that that's not who God created us to be, that he's blessed us with these children. So get the break you need if you need one. But let go of perfection, because you can work on that later when they're out of the house. Everything can be perfect again. But that baby and that toddler, they won't be there later. So you need to delight in it all right now. You need to let the stain on your rug be something that you laugh about. I told you last time. I told you last time about my friend who came over, one of my mentors, and my children had destroyed the floor when I was feeding them, and I was super embarrassed. And she said, hey, at my house, you can eat off the floor. I'm like, thanks. She said, no, you can. There's enough down there for everyone. So just embrace it. It is what it is. And your friend or neighbor may not be in your life 18 years from now, but hopefully your child will. So where do you want to put that good relationship? Go out every day. It makes a difference if you get into God's fresh air. And get away as you can, but don't escape. There's a difference between re-energizing and escaping. If you feel like you need to escape your family, there's a problem that needs to be addressed. And often prayer will do it, or talking to a friend who will not tell you what you want to hear, but tell you what you need to hear. But if you constantly feel like you need to escape from your family, you might want to go talk to someone about it and get some strategies for dealing with that. It's a tough job, but it is an honor, and our attitude really is going to matter. And I want you to know, it really does get much, much easier. It does. My pastor drives me nuts. I love him to pieces, but he'll be like, it only gets harder. I'm like, no, it does not. It just doesn't. I acknowledge what he's saying, which is when they're teenagers, you have no control, and it's terrifying. But it's not as physically demanding as being a mother to a baby or a toddler. It gets much, much easier once they start peeing in the potty by themselves, once they can start writing notes by themselves, when they can read. I'm telling you, they like read stuff to themselves. I find myself sometimes being like, doesn't somebody want to read with mommy? It gets much, much easier, and it goes so fast. So fast. In a second, it's gone. And I know you've heard that cliche a million times, but I'm going to say it to you again. It goes so fast. So try to enjoy what you can enjoy. Diapers might not be it, but try to enjoy what you can enjoy. And just take those deep breaths and remind yourself that you are being honored. And then finally, last things to think about. Be at peace in that sleepy fog. Be encouraged because it gets easier. It's a phase. Don't miss it. But also revel in the honor of showing your children the world. you get to see everything for the first time all over again. Everything from butterflies to oceans to mountains to Disney princesses, you get to do it with them and experience it all over again and remember it. So enjoy it. Try not to wish it away. Okay. All right.